Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Monday, May 5, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Ward Ahmed, and we have great topics for you today. So the UAE has decided to have AI as a core subject of government institutions. The UAE has also lifted a ban on Emiratis to travel to Lebanon starting May 7. And thirdly, Abu Dhabi's AI powerhouse, G42, is planning U.S. investments. And we're also going to discuss how Ittisalat has opened a regional office in Miami, and finally, how Dubai's Damac saves the day for Chelsea.
Well, first of all, UAE, one of the biggest news over the weekend. It happened yesterday. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed announced it on his socials, and then the press releases came out and everything. But the UAE is making a bold move to future-proof its education system. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President of the UAE, Prime Minister of the UAE, and the ruler of Dubai, has announced that artificial intelligence will become a mandatory subject in all government schools across the country.
Now, the decision was approved by the UAE cabinet and will take effect in the upcoming academic year. So for the teachers right now, you don't have to worry. You don't have to start planning for the course immediately. Now, the new AI curriculum will be taught across all levels, starting from kindergarten through to grade 12 or grade 13, depending on the school, as part of the government's long-term vision to prepare students for such a rapidly evolving AI world that I feel we all live in.
Yeah. And Sheikh Mohammed, His Highness, made the announcement on his official X LinkedIn all the accounts, stating, "The UAE government today approved the final curriculum to introduce AI, artificial intelligence, as a subject across all stages of government education from kindergarten to grade 12. Those are the exact words. And then he described the initiative as a step towards preparing young minds for a different future and advanced skills.
And now the comprehensive curriculum has been developed by the Ministry of Education and aims to provide students not only with the technical knowledge of AI, but also an ethical understanding. Now it's going to cover key areas such as data, algorithms, real-world applications, and how AI is, you know, it's connected to society, it's connected to daily life.
And His Highness Sheikh Mohammed also emphasized the importance of equipping children with the tools to thrive in an entirely new world. He said, "Our responsibility is to prepare them with new skills and capabilities to ensure the continued progress of our nation for decades to come, not just 2-3 years. So planning is like decades-long planning. And I don't think I've seen it anywhere, AI being introduced, right?
I was going to say the same thing as a curriculum, and I think that's what the UAE is really good at. They're good with, you know, catching up with these things, and I think with AI, you know, where we live in a world, now, Majid, where if, you know, your coworker knows AI better than you, you're going to fall behind.
Yeah.
And you have no one to blame for it but yourself. So I think the fact that, you know, they're targeting, you know, children first in schools, it's so important because I feel like that's where the learning started for all of us.
And the most important thing is that it's a future-proofing approach. I love that word, future-proofing, because a lot of countries, they're still stuck in that rote learning, but UAE thinks that it's not just university students. We have a lot of university AI courses. We talked about it on the show once as well. Harriet Watt, I think one of my friend's son is studying AI there. Older friend, my son is 5, so yeah, very older friend. But again, it was already there in bits and pieces, but now it's been formalized in the government institutions. Soon, I think the agenda of this AI being a part of the curriculum will move to private schools as well. And it will be at that point that we'll see like a mass difference between the kids who are educated in UAE and then the kids who are educated outside elsewhere. So just making it a core subject is the greatest thing that can happen. A lot of kids will be happy as well, I think. We'll have to ask them, whoever we can find, that how do they think about it? So they're starting with government schools. Soon we'll have private schools. Maybe they'll create a policy. They can't enforce it, but they will have a policy. And I think the private schools themselves are already thinking of it.
I think, you know what it also was? I feel like the beginning phases of all of this, we saw it with Dubai AI Week, which was proposed by His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince of Dubai. And what happened there, by the way, Majid, is yes, the events were taking place every day, but I believe in schools, they had to like make it like an AI Week event. And, you know, the teachers had to plan something every single day, like, you know, to commemorate the entire week. So I think that was like the stepping stone, and it's definitely going to go further.
Yeah. They are going to become an AI hub. It's like 100% confirmed thing. But a lot of things are also coming out of UAE. The ban which has been lifted for Emiratis to travel to Lebanon starting May 7, it's a very important step as well. So it's a major diplomatic development between the UAE and Lebanon. We'll also talk about why it's important for business as well. And the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced that starting May 7, the travel ban on UAE citizens visiting Lebanon will officially be lifted.
And I think this is all very interesting because this decision actually followed the president of Lebanon, newly elected Joseph Aoun, who just was recently in Abu Dhabi meeting with the UAE president, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan. So, you know, we can see that it's all coming together. And, you know, this is definitely a step towards mending those ties between Lebanon and the Gulf region after years of political instability.
Yeah, and UAE citizens planning to travel to Lebanon must register via the ministry's Tawajjudi service, if I pronounced it correctly, before departure. They have to register, and whether they fly directly from UAE airports or from another country, registration must include accommodation details, emergency contacts, and reasons for visit. Travel is prohibited until the process is complete.
President Aoun expressed his gratitude in a phone call with Sheikh Mohammed, describing the decision as a symbol of the UAE's longstanding support for the Lebanese people. He also voiced hope that this move would open the door to deeper cooperation in the future.
And Lebanese Prime Minister Dr. Nawaf Salam also welcomed the decision, calling it evidence of the depth of ties between both countries, with an estimated 90,000 to 200,000 Lebanese residing in the UAE. The easing of restrictions could signal a broader thaw in regional relations. And business-wise, it makes sense also, because a lot of UAE people, they would want to do businesses there. And since it's a travel ban, they had to like send someone else or some of their people who worked there and were not Emiratis. So now they can travel themselves and see firsthand what's happening
but
in their businesses.
I think with this story also, Majid, it's so beautiful because, you know, you do have Emiratis who are, you know, they're ethnically Lebanese. And you know, for those people to be able to go back to Lebanon, I think also for Lebanese people who are Saudi, because, because Lebanese people, they have a history in Saudi. I think for them, this is like the next step. You know, I have a friend, she's Lebanese-Saudi, and she said, I'm so excited for when Saudi does it. You know, if the UAE did it, that means it's going to come soon for us. Yeah. So it's exciting in that sense for sure.
And this trip also had a business angle to it. Basically, President Aoun and our President, His Highness, they decided to make a business council as well, which will be a UAE-Lebanon business council. And that was good that on a government level, UAE will start making decisions or helping them set up their country back to normalcy. The only thing that these countries need, Lebanon, Syria, all these countries which are facing some sort of conflict or are coming out of some sort of conflict, they need the support of their like stronger brothers in the Middle East. And UAE, Saudi, to an extent, Egypt, all of these countries, Qatar, Kuwait, we can talk about all of them. All of them are somehow contributing by normalizing relations. And this is like the first step towards recovery for these countries.
And I think, you know what it also is, Majid? I think it's great because the Lebanese population in the UAE, it is very big. And especially, you know, the amount of Lebanese individuals that hold very successful businesses in the Gulf. Like, for example, I think this one has a very special place in my heart. It's the Bowery Company. And it's by, I believe her name is Christina Nas. And, you know, she's Lebanese. And by the way, just recently, her store has opened in Riyadh. Nice. So she's expanded from the UAE. She's opened it in Saudi Arabia. And basically her company, it's basically like New Yorkian Scandinavian furniture. And she brought it over all the way. She was basically saying that she used to live in New York. She was inspired by it. And, you know, she brought the culture here. I feel like another big example of a Lebanese entrepreneur is Mark Jahwan.
Yeah.
The founder of Sarwa. So it's... You know, Lebanese entrepreneurs, they play a really big role in the Gulf, and their work has been extremely successful. So I think, you know, this is a very exciting story for them.
And it also shows that UAE, again, we always talk about diversity in UAE. The great thing is there's so many people, and sometimes when they had all these problems going on in their countries, UAE became somehow the home that they wanted.
A safe haven.
Yeah, and then they came here. They were again, everyone has the opportunity to do something great here in this country because the processes are so simple and they're so clear and the guidelines are so vivid. So the good thing is that anyone can be successful here. And Lebanese people, Syrian people, all these people who come from conflicted regions and countries, they came here, they built a home here, and eventually built UAE to what it is. And the leaders actually love this. That is why when I remember this meeting happened between President Aoun and His Highness, the President of the UAE, they were meeting like they were brothers, friends. Usually when you see formal meetings, it's like a good handshake and they just sit and talk. Since both of them spoke Arabic, I remember the video, they were speaking in Arabic to each other. And then His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, the video published by Abu Dhabi Media Office and WAM and all of them, it had a dialogue from him, actually, which said that you guys are like brothers and we're so happy that finally we see some form of stability and we will try our best to help you. So it shows that the bigger brother, the elder brother or the most stable brother is trying to help all the brothers in the region. Mm. And it shows you that this is going to show eventually after like 5 or 10 years, you'll see the difference that we talk about Middle East as a superpower, but this superpower is only going to become stronger as normalcy and as stability comes to these countries.
Yeah, you made a really good point there, Majid. There's definitely, I feel like Arab solidarity is such a big thing here. You know, I remember I was watching this video for, you know, the big fans of the Crown Prince of Saudi, and it was basically the entire video, Majid, was the Crown Prince meeting with every single Arab leader and how they hug and how they shake hands and him meeting with the Western leaders. It was so interesting because you can clearly see that the leaders here, you know, Arab people, they're so important to them.
Yeah.
They're really, really important to them. And we don't just see it in the way that they greet one another. We see it in the business dealings. Yeah. Just very recently, Qatar and Saudi, they did announce paying off the $15 million debt to the World Bank for Syria.
Yeah.
You know, we also saw it with the $51 billion reconstruction plan in Gaza that Egypt themselves called in as a meeting. Mm. And, you know, all the Arabic leaders, even from the Gulf, did attend. So I think that we constantly see that we're in contrast in the West. You don't hear of that often. You don't.
Ah, we see that in Trump's policies, even his best friends in trade, not even best friends in his own personal business, even his friends in trade countries, he put tariffs on them, literally everyone. And here you see an example of brotherhood between Middle East and Gulf countries trying to build each other up, not pushing everyone down so you can go up. So it's a very nice contrast when you see Western politics and Western business ties and now Middle East trying to help each other. Talking about that, powerhouse and Trump and US, Abu Dhabi's AI powerhouse G42, which is chaired by His Highness Sheikh Thanoun, is making a major play in the United States. According to the Financial Times, the company plans to invest tens of billions of dollars as part of its aggressive U.S. expansion strategy.
And I think this one is a really big one. They've actually established a new legal entity, G42 USA, incorporated in Delaware in January. So several of its subsidiaries, including those in cloud computing, AI applications, and data centers, are expected to announce U.S.-focused business plans in the coming months.
And the expansion builds on G42's growing partnership with the U.S. Last year, Microsoft invested $1.5 billion in the company, prompting G42 to sever ties with Chinese firms like Huawei. It also invested $335 million in U.S. chip maker Cerebras Systems and now receives chips from NVIDIA after securing export approval.
And I think with this, it's really interesting because we can see that the UAE, it's investing in the U.S., but they're also actually investing in AI, you know, from the ground up here. And, you know, we see this in how they're officially incorporating AI as an entire class in government institutions.
And this follows a series of bold AI moves from the UAE, including a 13 billion dirham digital strategy, a sovereign cloud deal with Microsoft and Core42, which is also a subsidiary of G42. So whenever you see 42, it's somehow related to G42. And the rollout of AI-powered tools in public administration, the UAE continues to position itself as a global leader in artificial intelligence. We just talked about the Dubai AI Week and the inaugural version. Such a big event. Even schools had to have this AI week within their institutions. The most important thing that I see right now is what is Saudi doing about it also. And Saudis are also growing. They are trying to become the next powerhouse. The best thing about it is the race between these two. I love it so much. It's not a competition of sorts. Usually when you look from a Western perspective, it's like, oh, they're trying to win and they're trying to win. It's actually them growing together. Obviously, healthy competition is there. We want to be bigger. We want to be bigger. But I remember the Dubai Future Foundation head, I forgot his name, Mr. Behloul, the second name I remember. His point was very on point, actually. He said, we don't want to be number one. We strive to be. Remember, we shared that video. And this is the idea. So all these companies, G42, next we're talking about EA and also, all these companies, they just don't want to be local. They just don't want to stay in Middle East. They want to conquer the world. And what better place to go and set up and take business than US right now? So, yeah. Very nice strategy.
Majid, you know, you mentioned Saudi, but I think that we also see it in Qatar. Yeah. We see it in Oman too. And I think for me, it was there was this story. I believe you were the one who wrote it. It was about Starlink. Starlink, Elon Musk's Starlink.
Oh, yeah. Starlink has, they started, the first Middle Eastern country and first airline to implement Starlink was Qatar Airways.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and they took it, then it went to Jordan. They're planning to, most probably soon enough, they'll be everywhere in the Middle East. I don't think UAE and Saudi will jump on the bandwagon soon because we already have 5G and good internet services.
I think it's interesting how, you know, Elon Musk, just as he sees everything that Donald Trump is doing, he's expanding his services, whether it's in Starlink, in Qatar, in Jordan, but also in Tesla. Yeah. You know, recently they just opened their official headquarters, the first, in Saudi Arabia. So you can definitely see that he's moving to a new market there. He's targeting a new market.
And the new market is a very big market. That is the, smartness of
this
guy.
And also a generous one.
Yeah. That's a generous market. And the funny thing about Elon Musk coming to this region is he understands. On one hand, he supports Trump, who says, make America great again. But on the other hand, he understands right now that the capital and the money and all the monetary financial power is right now in this region. That is why his expansion of all the products that he has is coming in this region. So, again, very smart player. That is why I think he's the richest man in the world right now. Talking about another giant from the UAE, telecom giant E&, is expanding its global footprint, this time to the Americas. E&, Wholesale has launched a new regional office in Miami, U.S., marking its entry into the North and South American markets. The company announced in a press release.
Now, the Miami hub will serve as a strategic gateway for telecom operators, enterprises, hyperscalers, and AI companies. Now, it's going to offer a full suite of services, including managed voice, data, connectivity, roaming, and mobility solutions to meet the growing digital demand across the region.
Yeah, and the decision to set up in Miami comes as E&, experiences strong momentum from previous expansions in London and Singapore. The America's push is also aligned with E&'s broader focus on AI-driven digital infrastructure and automation technologies.
Now, Pablo Milkota will lead the rollout as Senior Vice President International, while plans are already underway for a second new hub in Johannesburg in South Africa. Now, this expansion underscores Ittisalat's ambition to become a truly global player in next-gen connectivity and AI infrastructure. Now, with this story, Majid, I really saw it coming because of the fact that, you know, for me, this is still such a big thing, but in the Davos conference in Switzerland this year, Ittisalat was ranked as one of the fastest growing companies in the world. And, you know, we're seeing this in how they just opened a regional office in Miami. They're heading to South Africa next. Yeah. You know, the Ittisalat story is beautiful.
And it's a very nice thing. If you look at it from a world map perspective, there's London. So they're placed in London, then they have Singapore. So they open up the eastern part of the world. And then America now, one of the biggest markets, obviously. And they're already very nicely well set in the Middle East. And then Johannesburg opens their way into Africa. So it's a very like global, you literally see it on a map and you're like, yeah, nearly all the continents they've covered. So let's see, Ittisalat is growing. Ittisalat, the next level thing recently that they did, which I saw last year around November, they published this ad with so many stars, Jason Statham, Lewis Hamilton, Shah Rukh Khan, Bollywood King, Megan Fox, I still think she's relevant, but there was an Emirati or some Arab influencer, five big names they just put into one ad. Usually you see a testimonial kind of ad with one person doing something. They put all five. So imagine the budget, and then imagine the global scale that they want their services to be on. They want to tap the Indian population with Shah Rukh Khan. They want to bring Jason Statham to bring Americans in.
I remember the ad now. I remember, did it have Lewis Hamilton on it too?
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton, Jason Statham, Shah Rukh. Two more people, Megan Fox and the Arab personality, I forgot her name. I Googled it at that point, but she was like the fifth person in that. So it, you see it on their branding, in their marketing, that they're just not happy to be in the Middle East. They want to be a global player. Like if you talk about global players in telecom, you can talk about Huawei. Actually, they're very everywhere. Their infrastructure, the machines, the whole infrastructure that you need for mobile connectivity, the towers and everything, a lot of that is Huawei. So they are...
Zain is also doing really well.
Yeah, Zain is also doing really well. So it's nice to see these giants also grow. Sometimes we love to do startup stories, but sometimes these giants also expand and they give you a new perspective that, okay, there's still markets to tap. We think E&A is very big, but E&A thinks that there's still markets to tap. So really interesting for that.
It is. And something interesting that has just recently happened is that Dubai-based Damac Properties has signed a short-term front-of-shirt sponsorship deal with Chelsea Football Club. And, you know, this is marking one of the most high-profile partnerships in the final stretch of the 2024-2025 season. Now, this deal covers Chelsea's remaining Premier League fixtures and UEFA Europa Conference League semifinal matches, providing a timely commercial boost for the club.
Yeah, and the funny story is this is the first time Chelsea has featured a shirt sponsor this season. The whole season, they were without a sponsor. The London club had spent the majority of the campaign without one. Following the expiration of their agreement with Infinite Athlete in May 2024, their recent absence from the UEFA Champions League diminished their sponsorship appeal, with participation in the Europa Conference League offering less global exposure.
Now, the reason why this partnership is, it's really special. It's, you know, it's beyond the pitch, because they also just announced Chelsea Residences by Damac, a luxury football-themed residential development in Dubai, Maritime City. Now, the project is blending Chelsea's iconic brand with Damac's real estate expertise, featuring high-end amenities, which I'm sure many of the football players who come stay in Dubai will love.
While the deal strengthens Chelsea's brand presence in the Middle East, it remains a short-term arrangement. The club is now actively seeking a long-term shirt sponsor for the 2025-2026 season and will likely appear unsponsored during the 2025 FIFA Club World Cup. Apparently, in the start, they were saying that the Mac logo may stay there, but now it's clear that it's not.
I think for me, Majid, this is really interesting because, you see Damac, they're teaming up with Chelsea, but... You know, an example for me that I'm just, like, remembering suddenly is, remember Noon? Remember when they got the name of the brand on, was it Al-Ittihad? Yes, it was.
Arabic clubs.
I remember Muhammad Al-Abbar, the founder of Amar Properties, who are behind Burj Khalifa, I remember he had said that he doesn't believe in marketing. And for me, that's why I remember that so
and
much.
He put his logo.
because I saw Al-Ittihad's football players and Noon was right. To be honest with you, it's smart because it matches their attire. It's yellow. Yeah. So, it's interesting how you see, someone like Muhammad Al-Abbar, who's going for regional football clubs, and you see that Damac is actively trying to expand. I think that's what it's a sign of.
In the U.S.
First it was with their $20 billion data centers that are going to be applied by Damac, by Damac. And then we also saw it in, I remember they had this real estate investment in Miami.
There was a building which was brought down, I think, because of some problems, and the land went into bidding, and Hussain Sajwani bought that land, and they're building like an 8-story luxury apartments there. Mm. So that's where he's always seen with Elon Musk and Trump. He makes sure he posts those pictures online.
And I think for me, this is big news for Damac. It's great news, in fact, because I feel like in the real estate race, they are definitely ahead.
Yeah.
They are definitely ahead because, just recently it was announced that the Trump Organization is going to have an 18-hole golf course in Qatar. And, for me, that was a big moment because in my head I was like, for the longest time ever, we've all been saying the only 18-hole golf course in the Middle East, it's by Trump. Yeah. But now it's also going to be in Qatar, and it's in collaboration with Dar Global. So, the fact that, Damac, they're taking it the next step. To all of these other real estate enterprises, they're always, stretching far and across the world.
This thing, you have to put it to all the companies that they don't fight with each other or they don't bring each other down. It's such a nice synergy where everyone is growing at their own pace and no one wants to interfere with each other. Like, oh, this guy has launched something, so we should do it. Oh, because it's a trend. No, everyone has their specialty. Every developer that you see, Imar, the Mac, Miral is there, Bin Ghati, they have their specialties. No one interferes. Everyone is building their own thing.
Even their marketing magic. It's all very different. Like, for example, with Bin Ghati.
That man is itself the marketing material.
I agree with you. He's definitely a character. He's a good protagonist. But I think with Bin Ghati, we see in how, the second that they sign someone big, we all know when they signed Neymar, who I believe his penthouse was over $50 million. Then they signed Andrea Bocelli. They let us know. I think with Damac, we constantly know about the whereabouts of Hussain Sajwani. He's that, protagonist there.
Yeah. And very interestingly, Amira Sajwani was there. The funny thing is that the videos of her and the pictures of her holding the Chelsea shirt, they were shot a lot earlier. You can see from the match background. But then they announced it like last week around Friday or Thursday. So it's a very nice partnership. The main thing is that Chelsea and English Premier League, they're a big brand. Just putting their name there is going to be very important for them. It's a short-term deal, but most probably if there is a chance and if I think Chelsea doesn't get a front shirt sponsor, most probably the Mac may offer them something. And then we would see the Mac, the whole season starts around August, ends around May, June. We'll see the Mac logo on their shirts. Very possible. But let's see. As soon as it happens, you'll be known by us. Follow us on all Smashy social channels to get all the updates.
Yeah. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. That's a wrap for today. Make sure to follow us across all social media platforms and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
And this has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners. As soon as I get an update on our monthly listeners, I'll tell you. Thank you so much if you're one of them. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.